This program is provided by lawyer Kyungjin Kim.
When you think about a massive gold rush, mm-hmm. you know, there's usually this very specific image that comes to mind.
Oh, sure. Like wide open frontiers.
Right, exactly. Chaotic expansion. Mm-hmm. Just anyone with a pan and a pickaxe staking a claim wherever they want.
Yeah, a totally boundaryless landscape. Pure discovery.
But imagine if, like, right in the middle of this unprecedented frenzied gold rush, governments suddenly started dropping these giant impenetrable steel walls straight down into the rivers and valleys.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. That paints a picture.
Suddenly you're not just mining for gold, right? You're trying to figure out which side of the fortress you're even standing on.
And that tension is, well, it's exactly what defines the global tech landscape today.
Yeah.
We're looking at this massive contradiction happening in real time. Because on one side, you have the breakneck, almost incomprehensible speed of China's tech ecosystem,
right.
spanning everything, AI models, cutting-edge silicon, physical robotics.
And then on the other side?
On the other side, you have these towering geopolitical walls rising up to, you know, compartmentalize all of it.
It's completely fracturing the space.
Yeah.
And we are tracking this collision today through this incredibly detailed new report provided by lawyer Kyungjin Kim, a former lawmaker.
Yes, and the data in his report is just, I mean, it's staggering.
It really is. It paints a picture of a technological acceleration that is honestly hard to wrap your head around. I want to jump straight into this one statistic that, I mean, it literally forced me to stop reading and just stare at the page.
I think I know which one you're talking about.
I probably do. So according to the report, for 14 consecutive weeks, Chinese AI models have just absolutely dominated global API usage.
Yeah, dominating is almost an understatement.
We were talking about processing 28.13 trillion tokens in a single week.
28 trillion tokens. Just, I mean, to conceptualize that for a second.
Yeah, put that into perspective for us.
So if we consider a token to be roughly equivalent to a word, or maybe a fragment of a word, processing that volume in just 7 days means these models are not just, you know, novelties sitting in an R&D lab somewhere.
Right. They're not just running test scripts.
Exactly. They're fully integrated into the daily industrial operations of the global economy.
Wow.
And this level of throughput, it's only possible because the underlying economics of the software have just fundamentally shifted.
The cost, right?
Yeah. The barrier to entry has essentially collapsed.
Okay. Let's unpack this a bit, because how does that actually work in practice? Yeah. If a company is processing 28 trillion of anything, the computing costs should be just astronomical.
You would think so, yeah.
But looking at the software price war in this report from lawyer Kyungjin Kim, the numbers are going in the completely opposite direction.
They're plummeting.
Like Alibaba, for instance. They're releasing the open weights for their new model, Qwen 3.8 Max.
Right.
And they aren't just selling a subscription. They're letting developers download the actual pre-trained architecture.
Which is huge.
It is. It has 2.4 trillion parameters, but it costs just $2 per million input tokens.
$2? It's wild.
Because it uses what they call a mixture of experts, or MoE structure. The report says it only uses 95 billion active parameters at any given time.
Yeah, that mixture of experts architecture is the absolute key to unlocking that $2 price point.
How so?
Well, a parameter is essentially a digital synapse, right? It's a connection that AI uses to make decisions.
Okay, I follow.
So firing 2.4 trillion of them every single time you ask it a simple question.
Like asking for a recipe or something.
Exactly. That would require massive amounts of electricity and computing time. It's incredibly inefficient. MoE solves this by compartmentalizing the knowledge.
Okay, so if we think of that 2.4 trillion parameter model like a massive state-of-the-art hospital.
Oh, I like that analogy.
So you walk in with a broken arm. You do not need the cardiologists, the neurosurgeons, and the oncologists all swarming your bed and billing you for their time.
Right. That would be a very expensive hospital bill.
Exactly. You just need the orthopedic specialist.
Yeah.
So MoE does the exact same thing for AI. Instead of waking up the whole hospital, it only activates the 95 billion specific, quote unquote, experts needed to answer your prompt.
That's spot on.
You get the knowledge of the entire facility, but you only pay for the one doctor you actually see.
And that mechanism explains the efficiency perfectly. By selectively activating pathways, the power consumption and latency just drop dramatically.
Makes sense.
But here's the thing. Alibaba's $2 price point, that is just the beginning.
It gets cheaper.
Oh, yeah. DeepSeek's latest release, the V4 Flash 07301, it completely rewrites the floor for these costs.
Wow.
They released it under an MIT license, making it highly accessible for commercial use. And the cost, it's 14 cents per million input token.
14 cents. I mean, that is over 100 times cheaper than Anthropic's Claude Fable 5.
Yep, over 100 times.
And the craziest part of the report is that this budget-friendly Flash model actually beat DeepSeek's own premium flagship model, the V4 Pro, on 9 different benchmarks.
That's the part that really turns heads.
Right. But they didn't do it by building a bigger model. They did it purely through, like, post-training tweaks.
Yes.
How is it possible that DeepSeek made a model 100 times cheaper that actually beats their own premium flagship just by tweaking things after the main training is over?
What's fascinating here is that we have to look at what post-training actually achieves. Because the AI development process, it basically has two main phases.
Okay.
The first is the base training. That's where you just feed the model the entire internet. It learns grammar, facts, the relationships between words.
Right, it's just absorbing everything.
Exactly. It becomes highly knowledgeable but completely disorganized. And that takes massive supercomputers and months of time.
So where does post-training come in?
Post-training is the refinement phase. Think of the base model as a world-class athlete who has incredible raw physical power, but they don't actually know the rules of the game they're playing. Post-training is the coaching. It's where you use reinforcement learning to teach that athlete how to run a specific play flawlessly.
So DeepSeek didn't spend millions forcing the model to, you know, read more books. They just became incredibly efficient at coaching the model they already had.
Exactly. They kept the exact same base structure as their previous V4 Flash, but they drastically improved the instruction following and what we call agentic behaviors.
Agentic behaviors.
Yeah, that's when an AI doesn't just chat with you, but can actually formulate a multi-step plan, use tools, and execute actions on your behalf.
Oh, wow. Like a real assistant.
Right. So by heavily optimizing how the model reasons through problems during this post-training phase, DeepSeek proves you don't need a massive, expensive neural network to get premium results.
You just need a smarter refinement process.
Exactly. And this tells us that China's cost performance curve, it isn't flattening. They are aggressively squeezing top-tier logic out of budget-level computing.
Wait, but if the cost drops to 14 cents and the logic is that good, the flood of users must be just apocalyptic for the server farms.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, processing 28 trillion tokens at that price point would completely melt standard infrastructure. You can't have a software ecosystem booming like this without unbelievable physical computing power underneath it.
You really can't.
So how are they physically running this?
Well, the physical infrastructure is under immense strain, and that is forcing rapid evolution on the hardware side.
Okay, so the hardware has to catch up.
Right. According to the data provided by lawyer Kungjin Kim, Huawei is moving at a breakneck pace to meet this demand.
What are they doing?
They're pushing the deployment of their Ascend 950DT chip on Huawei Cloud ahead of schedule, bumping it up to this August.
Wow, rushing it to market.
Yeah, and DeepSeek is already being floated as a potential early adopter. And to understand why this matters, you just have to look at the specs. It delivers 2 petaflops of FP8 computing power.
Okay, let's break down FP8. I know a petaflop is like a quadrillion operations per second.
Which is mind-boggling on its own.
Truly. But why does the FP8 part matter so much for running these massive AI models?
So FT8 stands for 8-bit floating point format. Traditional high-performance computing, like what you use for very precise scientific simulation.
Like modeling weather or something.
Right. That usually requires 32-bit or 64-bit precision. It uses really long decimals to be perfectly accurate.
Okay.
But AI neural networks are inherently probabilistic. They don't actually need perfect mathematical precision to just guess the next word in a sentence.
Oh, I see.
So by dropping down to 8-bit precision, the chip requires vastly less memory to store the numbers, and it can perform math significantly faster.
Oh, that's incredibly efficient.
Extremely. The Ascend 950DT is fully optimized for this AI-specific math, which makes it 2.5 times faster than Huawei's previous flagship chip.
So it is purpose-built to just churn through those 28 trillion tokens.
Exactly.
And Huawei isn't the only one cashing in on this hardware demand, right? The report highlights Cambricon successfully adapting the DeepSeek V4 model onto its chips.
Right.
And they are turning profitable and booking orders out to 2027.
They're booked solid for years.
And then you have CXMT Changxin Memory Technologies hitting a market cap of 3.54 trillion yuan.
Yeah.
which makes them the number one stock on the A-share market, and that's mainland China's domestic stock exchange.
CXMT is perhaps the most critical yet overlooked piece of this entire hardware puzzle.
Really? More than the processors?
Well, everyone focuses on the processors, like Huawei's or NVIDIA's chips. Mm. But AI hardware suffers from what engineers call the memory wall.
The memory wall?
Yeah. You can have a processor capable of 2 quadrillion calculations a second, but if it can't pull data from the memory chips fast enough...
Oh, it just sits there waiting.
Exactly. The processor just sits there, starving for information. CXMT operates in the DRAM space, providing that high bandwidth memory that feeds data into the processor.
So they're the supply line.
Right. Without top-tier DRAM, the entire AI operation just bottlenecks.
Hold on, though. 3.54 trillion yuan is an astronomical valuation for a memory company.
It's massive.
Especially since the report notes CXMT is fourth globally in DRAM, holding only about an 8% market share.
Yeah, that's true.
So I have to play devil's advocate here.
Yeah.
U.S. lawmakers are actively urging a national security probe into CXMT. Are these numbers reflecting actual technological catch-up, or is this valuation just artificially pumped up by, you know, massive strategic state funding?
Well, state subsidies absolutely provide a safety net for that kind of aggressive scaling, but that valuation is largely driven by a massive organic market dynamic that was, ironically, inadvertently created by the U.S.
Wait, the U.S. created their market boom?
Essentially, yes. The semiconductor sanctions designed to cut off China's access to advanced Western chips effectively trapped all domestic tech demand inside the country.
Ah, so companies that would normally buy hardware from the U.S. or South Korea suddenly have nowhere else to go.
Precisely. The sanctions acted like a greenhouse that created this forced self-reliance.
Wow.
When you have a domestic market as massive as China's, which is rapidly digitizing and deploying AI at a scale of 28 trillion tokens a week,
that is a huge captive audience.
Exactly. Tech giants are basically forced to buy from Cambricon, Huawei, and CXMT. They might only have 8% of the global market, but they have a near monopoly on supplying the world's most aggressive AI deployment environment.
That makes total sense.
Yeah, the revenue and iterative real-world testing they get from that captive market, it justifies those staggering valuations.
The walls meant to starve the ecosystem actually forced it to build a self-sustaining greenhouse.
A very apt way to put it.
And where all this ultra-efficient AI logic and booming domestic hardware inevitably leads? Well, it leads out of the server farm and into the physical world.
Yes.
Because the next logical step is giving these AI models bodies.
The robotic sector.
Yeah.
We are watching the abstract intelligence of these models translate into kinetic physical movement.
And lawyer Kung Jin Kim's report tracks this robotics gold rush perfectly.
It really does.
Like, Unitree is starting its IPO book building today, August 5th. This will be the very first humanoid robot stock on the A-share market.
A huge milestone.
They have a base valuation of 42 billion yuan, but the secondary market is expecting it to blow past 100 billion.
Unbelievable numbers.
And Agibot is also pursuing a Hong Kong IPO, targeting a $5.1 billion to $6.4 billion valuation. And they've already shipped over 15,000 units.
See, shipping 15,000 physical units is a massive threshold for a robotics company.
Because of the revenue.
Well, not just for the revenue, but for the data flywheel it creates.
Oh, right.
When you have 15,000 physical robots out in real-world environments navigating factory floors, dealing with unpredictable lighting, bumping into obstacles, they are constantly collecting edge case data.
Learning from their mistakes.
Exactly. That data is fed back into those ultra-cheap, highly capable AI models we just talked about, which then refine the robot's operating system, making the next iteration drastically smarter. It is a compounding physical advantage.
But the report does flag something interesting about Unitree specifically. Their first half revenue growth actually slowed down to 40%.
Yeah, that is a key detail.
Now, 40% growth is still massive in almost any other industry. I mean, it's like a teenager growing 4 inches in a year instead of 6.
Right. Still quite a growth spurt.
It's still huge, but expectations are sky high. So in a sector where secondary markets are whispering about 100 billion yuan valuations, does a slowdown to 40% signal that the hype is outpacing the reality of commercial adoption?
Well, the sheer altitude of expectations in robotics right now means any deceleration is going to be heavily scrutinized.
Obviously.
Investors pricing in 100 billion yuan are expecting flawless exponential scaling. But lawyer Kim Jin Kim provides a really crucial perspective on why this specific IPO matters far more than Unitree's quarterly growth rate.
Really? What makes this IPO the anchor for the industry?
Lawyer Kinjin Kim points out that this IPO creates the very first real public benchmark for humanoid robot valuations.
Oh, because it's always been private money before.
Exactly. Historically, this space has been entirely funded by venture capital and private equity, where valuations are totally opaque and just based on projected potential.
Right.
By going public, Unitree is putting a hard market-tested number on the board. This valuation basically becomes the global exchange rate for humanoid robotics.
That changes everything.
It does. Every other robotics company in the world, including major players in Korea, will use Unitree's public market CAC as the reference point for their own valuations, their fundraising, and strategic acquisitions.
So it grounds a completely theoretical industry in hard market reality.
Exactly.
We have hyper-efficient AI software, a self-sustaining domestic hardware supply chain, and physical AI robots hitting the public markets.
The full stack.
The technology is mature enough to deploy globally. But this is exactly where we crash headfirst into those steel walls we talked about at the top of the show.
Right.
We are rapidly entering the era of the geopolitical splinter net.
And if we connect this to the bigger picture, the friction between technological capability and national security is completely fracturing the global tech stack.
It's tearing it apart.
The technology wants to expand, but the legal frameworks are forcing it into these isolated silos.
Just look at the rapid-fire bans happening right now. The US FCC recently banned the import of new Chinese humanoid and quadruped robots,
right,
explicitly citing security concerns. Meanwhile, a Chinese company called Minimax just released the open weights for their top-tier H3 video generation model.
Which is a phenomenal model, by the way.
It is. Meaning developers can download the architecture.
Yeah.
But Minimax strictly excluded the US, the EU, the UK, and South Korea in their terms of service.
See, we usually see the US restricting advanced exports to China. Seeing a Chinese firm geoblock the West from using an advanced model is a very significant reversal.
Wait, so Minimax actually geoblocked us?
Yeah.
Are we moving away from a global open source community into these walled, gated tech fortresses?
Well, the rationale for Minimax isn't necessarily just pure retaliation.
No.
They're blocking the West due to pending AI regulations in those regions and a huge wave of massive copyright lawsuits from Hollywood studios like Disney, Universal, and Warner Bros.
Oh, because it's a video model. That makes sense.
Right. But the walls are also going up to stop intellectual property theft in the other direction.
How so?
The U.S. Bureau of Industry and Security, the BIS, is actively investigating a Chinese AI firm called Moonshot AI.
Okay.
The allegation is that Moonshot used 24,000 fake accounts to, quote unquote, distill Anthropic's Claude Fable 5 model via NVIDIA servers.
Distill.
Yeah, the concept of distillation is really at the heart of this entire geopolitical battle. In AI, distillation is a process where you take a massive, highly capable, incredibly expensive teacher model like Claude.
Right.
And you use its outputs to train a smaller, cheaper student model.
So instead of Moonshot spending $100 million to teach their own AI how to reason from scratch, they just set up 24,000 fake accounts to repeatedly interrogate Claude Fable 5.
Basically, yes.
They take all of Claude's brilliant answers, feed them into their cheap student model, and just teach it to mimic the logic.
That is the exact mechanism. The student model learns to replicate the teacher's high-level reasoning without ever needing the massive computing power to generate that reasoning organically.
That's wild.
But this creates a massive aha moment regarding these geopolitical walls. If a company can perfectly clone a protected, state-of-the-art U.S. model simply by pinging its API with fake accounts for a few weeks, then traditional export controls on software might be technologically impossible to enforce.
Oh, wow. Because you can't put a physical embargo on digital logic once it's connected to the internet.
Exactly. The moment you open an API to the public, your model can be distilled and cloned anywhere in the world. No wonder the BIS is investigating.
But the report does note there is significant pushback from technical experts on this specific Moonshot allegation.
Yes, there is.
Moonshot released their model just 15 days after Claude Fable 5 came out. And experts are arguing that 15 days is simply too tight a window to systematically ping an API, distill a 2.8 trillion parameter model, train the student model, and launch it to the public.
Right. They're saying the physics of the timeline just do not add up.
Yeah.
But whether the Moonshot allegation is technically feasible or not, the paranoia it highlights is very, very real. And the retaliation is compounding.
It's escalating.
Definitely. China's Commerce Department is currently considering its own sweeping export controls on AI models and data, essentially mirroring the U.S. framework.
For tat.
Exactly. With the upcoming Washington summit between Donald Trump and Xi Jinping scheduled for September 24th, AI safety and dual-use military applications are going to be front and center. Both superpowers are trying to lock down their ecosystems.
I want to circle back to the Minimax geo-blocking, though, because the implications of that are staggering.
They really are.
A developer sitting in Seoul or London literally cannot legally use one of the most advanced video models in the world solely because of their zip code and local copyright laws.
Yeah.
We are officially moving away from the utopian idea of a global, collaborative, open source community.
We are witnessing the forced fragmentation of the internet. And lawyer Kunjin Kim provides a very sharp analysis on this exact point.
What does he say?
He emphasizes that Minimax's exclusion of Korea and the West proves that legal and regulatory risks are causing AI deployment to fracture by country. The deciding factor for innovation is no longer just who has the best algorithms.
It's about where you are legally permitted to operate them.
Exactly. The jurisdictional borders of the physical world are being aggressively mapped onto the digital world.
That's a scary thought.
And lawyer Kunjin Kim stresses a highly practical takeaway for global businesses here.
Okay, what's that?
If China continues to lock down its open source models through their own export controls, tech companies worldwide, many of whom, you know, quietly rely on these incredibly cheap, powerful Chinese models for their back-end operations, they are incredibly vulnerable.
Oh, because the tab could get turned off.
Right. If Beijing or Washington shuts off API access tomorrow, any business without a secured backup pathway will see their platforms instantly crash. Securing redundant cross-border API access is now a critical operational necessity.
So what does this massive collision of forces mean for you, the listener?
It's the big question.
Whether you are a software developer plugging into a 14-cent API to build a startup, or an investor trying to price the new wave of humanoid robot stocks, or just a business owner relying on open source tools to automate your workflow. The landscape is shifting under your feet.
Constantly.
We are seeing unprecedented technological acceleration happening simultaneously with the erection of massive regulatory blockades. The technology and the geopolitics are now completely inseparable.
You really can't accurately map the future of your industry without understanding both the capabilities of the models and the locations of those steel walls.
Which brings us to a final provocative thought to leave you with today.
Oh.
We are watching the two biggest tech superpowers on the planet aggressively lock down their most advanced AI models and robotic hardware behind export controls, copyright blockades, and national security bans.
Right.
If the U.S. and China both continue to build these gated, heavily fortified tech fortresses, shutting each other and their allies out, will the rest of the world be forced to simply pick a side? Mm. Or will this intense fragmentation accidentally birth a third truly open global ecosystem, perhaps driven by Europe, or a decentralized open source community that rises up to fill the massive void left by these walled gardens?
Honestly, it is the defining technological question of the next decade.
We will keep tracking the data to see where the cracks in those walls begin to show. Thank you for joining us on today's deep dive into the report from lawyer Kunjin Kim. We'll catch you next time.
This program is provided by lawyer Kyungjin Kim.
For more from the same network, follow daily AI news from Seoul on Apple Podcasts.